Commander Shepard has been recovered. The Lazarus Project will proceed as planned.
The title alone will just be, the Geth are not soulless vacuum cleaners. That's the title. And then I'll be like, send a tip.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special live episode of the Lazarus Project podcast. Almost 2 years ago now, a man whose name, who's a suspicious acronym for the Elusive Man, approached me to start a podcast by the name of the Lazarus Project. It's my co-host, the one and only Tim.
Hello.
Today we have a very special guest, an exciting up-and-coming Mass Effect content creator that so far has done an incredible job keeping us all speculating the possibilities of the next Mass Effect. It's the one and only Atharia, or Paragon 7.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me, guys. That felt like such a great intro. I just feel like I don't deserve it.
No, I think you've done some great content so far, and it's really cool. It's really exciting. Like, I don't know where you come up with some of these theories or how you tie all of this stuff together.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I honestly just spend a lot of time consuming like all the Mass Effect content that I possibly can. And yeah, I'm just, I don't know. I feel like I need to touch grass a little bit more, but at the same time, I enjoy it. So
yeah, welcome. Thank you very much for taking your time out to join us.
Yeah. No, yeah. I just got a new puppy yesterday. So yeah, but I had 100% wanted to come on with you guys because I had such a good time last time. So if you hear some random whining or something in the background, that might be him. But yeah, he's so sweet.
What named it?
So he's a charcoal Labrador. So we actually named him Sham, which means dark cloud in Sanskrit. So yeah, he's nice. So cute. He's a heart stealer.
so what brought you to Mass Effect? Of all the RPGs there is out there, what brought you to Mass Effect itself?
Yeah, so this is actually an awesome story. I used to I was like a Twitch streamer during the pandemic years, as a lot of people were doing, because we had a lot of free time. So yeah, I was just on Twitch and I got to meet a whole bunch of amazing people. And one of them was a fellow Canadian known as LadyBear26 on Twitch, as well as her friend, DaSweetie2. And those two are huge Mass Effect fans. So I kind of got to know them, and every time I would pop by their streams or they would pop by mine, they were like, you have to play Mass Effect, because they're just huge, huge, huge fans. Like since the original games, you know? So yeah, and for the record, I knew nothing about Mass Effect going in. Like, I didn't even know Shepard's name. I knew no characters. I knew absolutely nothing. And I had never played a traditional like RPG shooter game before. Like, I like, my bread and butter are games like Final Fantasy, Assassin's Creed, like Fire Emblem, you know, like that type of vein of things, as well as like things like Smash and like Pokemon, you know, like just the general like well-known games. So I had never kind of gotten into the just the RPG shooter genre. So I was like, okay, sure, I'll try it out. And I actually streamed my first playthrough. And I remember thinking while I was streaming it, like, I also hadn't been able to have like a customizable protagonist before. So the whole experience was just completely new. Like, I rarely played choice-based games as well, you know, like games like Detroit Become Human and oh man, I'm blanking on the super popular one. But like in general, just I don't usually play choice-based games. So I was like, you know, I didn't go in with a lot of expectations. And I remember a very, very clear moment it was off stream. And I was just randomly going like through the planets, just the random ones that you can kind of just discover and roam around with the Mako. And I just remember a clear moment where I was just driving in the Mako of all things. And I was like, I am going to play this game in this series annually because I love it so much. And yeah, just in terms of the why, because to me, like even just reflecting on it, it seems super random. Like I don't traditionally like shooters. I never played a choice-based game. I don't usually play customizable protagonists. But there truly was just a magic to the first Mass Effect game that I just fell in love with it. I completely fell in love with it. I fell in love with the characters. Yeah, just the vibe. So yeah, that's how I first got into it. Completely caught me off guard.
I suppose that's an interesting moment in itself. Like it's an unexpected moment, like to just be driving in the Mako, but it is a moment.
Well, in the Mako of all things, you know, because like obviously like I've played a few playthroughs since then and I don't like driving in the Mako. You know, like generally driving in the Mako, it's like bad vibes and, you know, trying to go up a mountain and you're going down the mountain. But
And that's with the improvements with the Legendary Edition.
Exactly, right? Like I don't even know what the originals were like, but it was surreal. I'll never forget that moment where I was like, it was just instant, you know, it just hit me like, this is going to be a game, at the very least Mass Effect 1, that I am going to play annually. And it was just, it felt like one of those magical, like, I had been waiting for this game my whole life type of moments, you know?
Did you roll with the choices or did you go back to previous saves to get the best possible ending?
I did not. I never reloaded a save. Okay, there was one exception. And that was the suicide mission in Mass Effect 2. Because there was a moment where I made a really careless decision and it ended up with Tali bleeding out on the floor and my heart just couldn't take it. So yeah, I restarted the suicide mission, I think 2 or 3 times before looking up a guide. Cause I was like, so first it was Tali went down and I was like, it was like the end of my world. And then the second time around it was Legion. And I was like, okay, I just need to guide this. I just need to guide this because I can't take any of these characters dying on me. So that was the only time that I have reloaded a save, though. And I made some really weird decisions. So my first playthrough was interesting.
How did your playthrough end, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah. I assume you're asking just the Mass Effect 3, which choice did I do? So I originally chose Synthesis, and I will say that the endings, when I first played it, I was very confused. I remember landing on Earth and like Take Back Earth, like that mission was absolutely amazing. I really enjoyed the whole thing. I enjoyed the final beam run. It was everything after that point where I was like, all right, where's the final boss? You know, like where's the final moment where something big, like where's the human Reaper moment, you know, of Mass Effect 2? And that just didn't really happen. And then I realized it was just going to be a super long back and forth with the Elusive Man. And I was like, oh, okay. They're trying to do this kind of, are you going to choose a Paragon or Renegade response to the ending here? And yeah, the entire conversation with the Catalyst kind of caught me off guard. So when I was kind of, I remember very vividly, I was making the final walk just towards the Synthesis beam. And I was feeling very, like almost empty. Because it just felt like it felt a little incomplete. You know, it felt like I was waiting for something that never really happened. And then obviously, the whole like an end once and for all starts playing and I'm just, you know, starting to tear up because that song just absolutely hits you in the solar plexus. But yeah, it was definitely interesting. I wasn't fully on board with like the Synthesis choice. I remember very distinctly thinking I wasn't going to choose Destroy And that was because I had the understanding that Edie was going to die. And I had gone very attached to Edie and her journey and kind of her realizing that she's going to be alive. So I knew instantly that I wasn't going to choose Destroy. And then I knew that Control was the elusive man, his decision. So I made my way over to Synthesis, but like it felt like the lesser of three evils at that point. So
I was watching a video the other day, actually, which says something quite interesting, which was like with how Saren kind of was a symbiotic relationship with like machines and organics. Yep. That's one of the things that I think makes you hesitate about Synthesis in the first place as well. Like the fact that kind of like.
I'm not entirely sure why I hesitate towards Synthesis so much. I guess it did feel kind of strange to suddenly make everybody understand one another. I think that's the heart of it. Because in general, I find that, you know, I don't know, I've always liked the type of stories where everybody kind of has to come to their own conclusion, but by themselves. And Synthesis feels a little bit forced, like, you know, all right, we need to end this war and we need to like end all wars forever. So I am going to do this thing where you're going to understand each other now. You know, it didn't feel like my Shepherd personally would have wanted that, but my Shepherd didn't really want any of the options, I guess, presented. Refuse wasn't even, I didn't even know it was a thing until after I had played. So yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of negate, doesn't it, the whole Rannoch situation in like so many ways.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I frequently think about how good the also apologies, my ring light is randomly flickering. If it looks weird, just let me know and I can turn it off. It's just bothering me. But I to go back to the thought, I frequently think about how good the Genophage cure decision felt because it was set up for Mass Effect 1, and how good the Rannoch decision felt because it was set up for Mass Effect 1. And yeah, like you said, like Synthesis felt like the Rannoch decision was what I wish Synthesis was, where it was like Shepherd just kind of using their charisma or just as a renegade, just intimidating two sides into being like, no, you're going to understand one another. Kind of having it being forced upon you via like a random energy blast felt a little bit of a letdown. I prefer it when it's more like a face-to-face interaction and just kind of a changing of the minds as opposed to changing of the DNA, I guess.
Yeah. It does kind of turn Shepherd into a bit of a god, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I have looked at all of the endings. I mean, obviously with Control, I feel like Shepherd is very much the godlike, their consciousness is going to live forever, I guess. Yeah, I don't know if Synthesis, if I would classify that as Shepherd's like a god, more like Shepherd made one decision and it affected everybody. And that might not be, I'll go back to like, it's not what my Shepherd would have wanted to do. But again, like, the endings are what they are. And I honestly, I don't know how they could have ended that. Like, I don't know how they could have resolved the craziest, like, Reaper War ever. So, yeah, it's a tough conundrum. Like, I don't know how I would have done it. So definitely not bashing the decisions that they made.
Yeah, it's quite a big thing to try and stop. That's for sure.
It's crazy. Yeah. Like I wouldn't even know, like I haven't even actually given it a lot of thought. Do you guys have any thoughts on how you would have wanted it to end?
I not really thought about it, to be honest.
No, yeah, same. It's complicated.
Especially when they painted themselves into corners with saying that conventional weapons wouldn't destroy it. And
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You kind of, you're going to have to go for a big MacGuffin, aren't you? So.
Exactly. Yeah. It was huge. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I do like a lot of, and I think we obviously already talked about this in the last session where we spoke with the other creators as well. But I do like that part where, you know, you're with Anderson, but you're also with the elusive man. And I think that idea of the final battle just being a mental struggle, I do like that. But I just feel like that moment when you're in that room, there needed to be a way that you have a decision to make, but it not take you up some weird elevator and force you to speak to a space child.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. On my first playthrough, when the elevator started, I was like, I had a moment where I was genuinely like, oh, Shepard is the catalyst. Like, while that was happening, I was like, oh, Shepard's the catalyst. And we all thought that it was just the Citadel, but secretly it's Shepard. And as Shepard, we're going to do something really cool as the catalyst. And then that didn't happen. There was a small star child, and that immediately just dashed that away. So it was very confusing. Very, very confusing. But the whole time I legitimately thought that Shepard was going to be the catalyst. I think from Thessia onward, I had just a random theory, which I'm sure if you guys have watched any of my videos, you know, while I was going through that playthrough, I definitely was theorizing the whole time. And I genuinely thought that Shepard was going to be the catalyst. So yeah, the whole thing caught me off guard.
That's just so genius though. Like, cause that would be so clever, wouldn't it? Because the Prothean beacon, like, if they made it out so that the Prothean beacon would choose somebody, like, in the next cycle,
that's what I was thinking, you know? And then, like, yeah, I haven't given it much thought on how I would have wanted that to end, but I would have made Shepard the thing, you know? Like, the last twist is that Shepard was going to be the most important thing to solving the war, which is the point of the series, you know, I assume, but I remember I went from such a high of being like, yes, this is the moment, this elevator rising Shepard up is the moment, and then the Star Child appeared, and I it was interesting because, like I said, like, a lot of my experience in a lot of the games I play, a lot of it's more like on the fantasy genre, so when the Star Child appeared, I was like, wait, have I just entered a different game series? Or because I was playing this super late at night because I was like, I have to power through, I have to finish it. And I genuinely was like, am I hallucinating this? Or
I think so many people had that experience though. Like, they were so drawn in by all those dramatic moments in Mass Effect 3. Yeah. They just kept playing and playing and wanted to see it through to the end. But then when you get to the end, you get so much information thrown at you by this child that I'm impressed by the amount of people who can, like, take in all of that information. There's just so much that's thrown at you.
I remember. It was like, I'm pretty sure it was like 11:40, because when I finished it, I think I finished it on New Year's Day. It wasn't like at midnight or anything like that. Like, I woke up the very next day, I think. Oh no, I woke up the very next day to replay it. I think I might have finished it actually like close to the ringing in the new year for 2023. But I remember just going through all of the catalyst options and just slowly getting a little bit of a sinking feeling, like, oh, there's not going to be a final boss. And just all those traditional kind of game elements, I was like trying to just theorize, you know, and be like, what were they trying to make me feel? You know, like, what was I supposed to... Because, like, I'm always trying to, whenever I consume, like, anything, like, media-wise, is I'm always asking myself, like, what did the developers want us to feel in this moment? You know, like, if I'm ending off, like, a Breath of the Wild or something, or, like, a Final Fantasy 15, like, what did they want me to feel? And am I feeling that specific thing? And if those two things are aligned, I'm usually like, that was solid. That was a really a good game, which is why when I was ending that, when I was ending Mass Effect 3, I felt just empty because I was confused. I was confused about what they wanted me to feel, and I didn't know what I was feeling. So, yeah, it was just interesting. Definitely an interesting experience. And on subsequent playthroughs, it is also, I don't feel empty anymore. I think I feel more, here we go again. If anything, I don't know what that feeling would be. Maybe trepidation, but yeah, I just kind of, you know, I don't know, roll a dice and pick an ending. But yeah, it's definitely interesting.
It's like that awkward relative who goes on the rant that you're uncomfortable with.
At the family dinner, just, yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, here we go.
just wait for this conversation to end, and then we can get to the other bit that we like.
Yeah. I love it.
To me, there are parts about the very end that I like.
Oh, yeah. The whole Anderson part, I struggle not to cry. You know, like, the first time I was just tears out. But, yeah, that part hits me. Like, they could have totally just ended it there, and I would have been like, yep, they solved the Reaper War somehow. I'll believe it. Because that part is a tearjerker. It really is. And I do think it was the right decision to have Anderson kind of lay to rest there. And I was genuinely... I think I mentioned this before, but when I started my first Mass Effect 3 playthrough, and you're leaving Earth for the first time, and the first little trills of an end once and for all are playing, all I could think about was, oh, Shepard's going to die. Because there is no way they're going to be playing this type of sad song while leaving Earth. You know, it wasn't like a heroic, like, yes, I'm going to come back and I'm gonna save you. It felt like a, okay, this is, they're going to do something here that I'm not going to be a fan of. And then the dream sequences, and right before the final mission, Shepard sees themselves burning, and I was like, okay, this is happening. So yeah, I do think Anderson's death definitely felt right. Felt like it was set up, like, easily from the first game. And it was a good death, you know, like, it was it wasn't out of nowhere. But Shepard's death for me was, so not too much of a fan of that, but it's a struggle. It is a struggle.
So you do a lot of theorizing on your channel.
Yes.
Do you think that Shepard's going to be coming back?
100%. I am genuinely saying 100%, and I am not joking in any way. I just finished doing a trailer breakdown, 2.0. I already did one, like, it was like the fourth video I released. But I think I had maybe teased with you guys, it was either during the stream or after I ended, that I was going to do a trailer breakdown. And I just finished it, and I am 100% convinced that, yes, Shepard is coming back. As to why, I mean, obviously, you'll have to watch the video to find out all the details. I don't want to spoil too much here. But I will say that it's kind of a little bit of what I had covered in my first trailer breakdown. So I'll say those points here. I do think that the new Mass Effect trailer for the next Mass Effect is showing Alkara. And in my video, I provide definitive proof that it is Alkara. And to me, there is no reason why they would show that planet where Shepard had previously died in the trailer, showing Liara, you know, picking up the N7 insignia without it implying that the exact same thing is going to happen. And I already looked up, like, everything, like, franchise director Mike Gamble on Twitter has already said, like, it is not a Mass Effect 2 recreation. Like, I have done my homework. I have checked everything out. And I do think that Shepard is going to return in the next game. I don't know whether they're going to be the protagonist, but I do think we are going to get closure, and they are going to return.
Well, I'll make sure it's definitely linked in the description.
Yeah. Well, it's not done yet. it's not done yet. It will be done. Sorry, I'm just checking my calendar here. I think I'm planning to release it April 8th. So, then, April 8th. It's going to be a fun one.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mac Walters, and you're listening to the Lazarus Project podcast.
So, bit of a running joke on our podcast is that Tim believes that the Geth are like vacuum cleaners.
Okay.
And we were just wondering what your take on the Geth is.
Can I ask for some context on why you think they're like, do you think they look like vacuum cleaners or sound like?
No, not really. To me, the Geth are machines. They are machines. They were built to do a purpose. They are not.
Okay.
They're not alive, or they don't have a soul.
Right.
You gave the example, didn't you? If your vacuum cleaner gained a consciousness, right, you would take it apart, or you would take it outside, or something.
Right. Yeah. My vacuum cleaner started saying I wanted to sleep in my bed. I'd be like, no, you live in the cupboard. You live downstairs. And then if my vacuum cleaner kicked me out of my house and made me live in my car, I would be wanting to seek revenge and reclaim my house.
Right. So, oh, man. That Rannoch metaphor, though. Wow, that was awesome. All I can think about is, I don't know, Craig, if you're the opposite side of this, but that one conversation in Mass Effect 3 where... is it Dr. Chakwas and is it Adams who's having the conversation back and forth in the they're having the exact same debate, is like, are machines alive and stuff like that? Do you guys remember that? I think it's Mass Effect 3. It's just on the Normandy, just back and forth, and they're, you have to like support them.
Yeah. Remember that. Yep. No, actually, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that just made me think of that. Are the Geth vacuum cleaners? Never thought anybody would ask me that. I'll go back to, I guess, again, my first playthrough and what my first Shepard kind of felt towards this, because it's definitely something that they had an opinion on. And the whole time, I mean, obviously, I have a channel called Paragon 7, so I was very heavily a Paragon, and a lot of the Paragon responses to Edie, as well as to the Geth and stuff like that, are to reiterate to them, like, you are alive. And, you know, you have a soul. I think in quite a few conversations with the Quarians, you know, you have to, like, use Paragon interrupts to, like, shut them down. Or just kind of, you know, say, like, no, don't treat Legion, don't treat my friend that way, because he's alive, you know? Like, he has a consciousness. So I will say that the way that I role played it was that I do believe that the Geth are not just vacuum cleaners, or at least they're vacuum cleaners with souls, which is never a line I thought I would ever be saying on the internet, but there you go. or just out loud, really. That was a great line. So yeah, that's the way that I role played it. But I would say, like, my beliefs are a little bit more complicated. I will say this, I actually got sent on Twitter, I think like the other day, somebody had messaged me, the Asari's thoughts on what happens after you die. And it's in the Codex for Mass Effect 1. And there was a group of, Asari that think that when you die, that your spirit, or I guess in this case your soul, returns to like the universe, and then whatever kind of happens there, kind of mumbo jumbo stuff, you eventually are kind of like rebirthed. It's not like solidly reincarnation, but that's kind of like what they believe. And then obviously in Mass Effect Andromeda, the Angaras also believe, like, they fully believe in reincarnation, and in game you see like the reincarnation. I guess you see in the mission, one of the Angarans on the rebellious Angarans, touches one of their heirlooms and I guess has memories of their past lives. So from a me perspective, I think it would be very interesting to see if a Geth, I guess, had to, I don't know, like, retouch one of their armatures or one of their eyepieces or something that they had previously maybe inhabited, whether they would gain their memories back or something of that nature, you know? So it's super interesting. I'm leaning more towards the side of the Geth have the potential to have souls, but I'm not fully convinced that they do. But my shepherd does believe they have souls, so there's that aspect of it that's probably biasing me.
Have we convinced you, Tim?
No.
Nope. That wasn't good enough. I'll don't worry. I'll make a video and then I'll send it to you. The title alone will just be "The Geth." The Geth are not soulless vacuum cleaners. That's the title. And then I'll be like, send to Tim. I love it.
So I've got a some word association game for you.
Oh, okay.
So just say the first thing that comes into your mind when I say these.
I assume it has to be Mass Effect related.
Of course. Great. So we've got I've lost my page now. Here it is. Paragon or Renegade?
Paragon.
Normandy.
Joker.
Oh. The Geth.
Now I'm thinking soul. But the second word I thought of was Rannoch, which is interesting.
Caden or Ashley?
Oh, Caden. 1,000,000% Caden.
Jenna Page?
Cure.
And Cerberus?
The Elusive Man.
I could probably do some more. I'll do some more in a bit.
For sure. Yeah, no, that was super interesting. Geth and Rannoch, though, that's kind of wild. But yeah, I generally go for... I feel like the first thing that comes to mind are characters when certain things are said. But yeah, you said Geth and I didn't say Legion. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah, what do you guys think about the... Which side of the coin do you fall on, Caden and Ashley?
See, to me, it depends on who I'm playing as. If I'm playing as a renegade, I tend to keep Caden.
Oh, okay. Is there a reason?
It's mainly because I'm playing as a female when I'm playing a renegade, because I think Jennifer Hill does a far better renegade persona than a paragon persona.
Yeah.
So my female doesn't like competition from other females. So.
Oh, okay. That's so interesting. Fun fact, I have never actually fully completed a Mark Mir playthrough. Just because of time stuff. because I had to record like footage just for the channel and I really wanted to just feature a femshep. So I've never actually completed a full femshep playthrough. But I am looking forward to it.
He's really good at Paragon. But he just, I don't think he pulls off a renegade.
Renegade. Yeah, I've heard that he's more like snarky, sarcastic, as opposed to straight up mean, like Jen Hale can be. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I think renegade femshep, that's going to be fun. Haven't done that one yet either.
You know, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Craig, you got any?
Any what? Sorry, finish the sentence, please.
Oh, sorry.
Got some top three moments if you're wanting to.
Oh yeah, I was thinking, yeah. If you haven't got any more questions, maybe we move on to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Am I starting? Am I? I don't know.
Yeah.
felt very quiet then. I was like. actually, shall we just go like 3-2-1 and we'll just sort of go between us?
Sure.
I kind of labeled this as my number three moment. It's kind of for, I wish I could put it higher, but there's very personal reasons why it's not. And I don't know if you guys would have picked this actually, because it's such a weird moment to pick, but it's the moment in Mass Effect 2 where you're doing the suicide mission and you're just flying towards the collector base. It's the incredible music. It's the moment that kind of culminates your decisions in if you've upgraded your ship and everything. And it's just like, it feels like a very personal moment with Joker as well. It's like, I'm not going to let the Normandy go down like it did last time kind of thing. And he's like, you can see the kind of determination in him. And it feels like it's a lot of what Mass Effect 3 wasn't in. It's that culmination of your companions. It shows that your companions are important to this game, to this story, because, you know, everything hinges on their loyalty to you in the broader sense of the suicide mission. But just that moment where you're it truly feels like a suicide mission where you're flying towards the collector base. And yeah, just, and the fact that they integrated a moment where you're protecting the Normandy as well, you know, where you've got that probe thing that comes into the Normandy, you've got the companions there with you helping to defend it. It just felt so, so important and incredible. And like, I still get chills listening to that music every time during that moment. And, you know, maybe without the music, I wouldn't feel the same way, but I just have such a soft spot for it. Sorry, my voice is a bit weird.
Great moment. That's a great moment. Tim, I don't know if you want to go, because I haven't actually thought about my 2 and 3 yet. I'm still kind of ruminating.
Could do these on the fly. So I suppose mine are all really, for the first time that you play it, because they do diminish over time, but the very first time I played it, they were just the peak moments that really stood out to me. My third place one was seeing Tali and Garrus get together, because it's that they're NPCs, and it's not something you kind of see in normal games, where the people, you know, the world kind of revolves around you, the player. So when they're off screen, they're not important. So then to walk around the ship and you catch them, and it was like, oh yeah. And now I can never romance either of them, because they're destined to be together. So
I am so glad you brought that up, because I clearly remember the moment. I don't know if it's right before Earth or it's right before the Cerberus HQ mission. It's like one of those two. And I remember I always have, I'm sure you guys do as well. Like, you always go a certain route through the Normandy in order to talk to everybody. I made my way over to, like, I always go talk to Sam, like Sam Trainer. And then I go talk to Joker and Edie at the front. And then I go down, go to talk to Dr. Chakwas. And, you know, like, she's saying things like, you know, we're going to toast that brandy and stuff, right? And in the back of my mind, I'm like, nope, I'm dead. And then to be able to go from that over to a positive moment, and the next, I always go Dr. Chakwas to Garrus, and to just have that door open and to see Tali there and Garrus like embraced in a hug. Oh man, it's just, it made it all feel just so great. And 100%, Tim, I am on board. Like, I am very reluctant to romance either Garrus or Tali now. Because I really, really, that one moment was so, like, I had never thought about it. I had taken them both on multiple missions in Mass Effect 2, and their banter was just off the charts, you know? But I had never actually thought, like, oh, hey, wouldn't it be cool if they got together, you know?
To have them in my crew when I'm in Mass Effect 1, so that you get the elevator chat.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, 100%. If you ever take them to, I didn't know that. Because obviously there, I don't believe there's elevator stuff in Mass Effect 2, right? At all. So I took them both to the Citadel, and it was like my second or third playthrough. And the banter is still there, like off the charts. And I just like, Tally's threatening him with like a shotgun, a very specific, like the eviscerator or something. And I'm like, oh man, like, I can't wait for you guys to get together. And I ship them so hard, but I'm glad that you mentioned that one. I'm going to say this on the fly top three moments that I thought of in the last 5 minutes here, even though I knew what this stream was going to be out about, I guess I decided to leave it for the last second. But I'm going to choose something from the Citadel DLC, which is, I don't know why, but I really, really loved the pizza delivery Volus. Like, it seems like such a random, like, nonchalant moment that you just laugh at, but it's just, it felt so, like, it almost felt like the magic of Mass Effect 1, you know? We are just like, how do these... like, how do you get pizza on the Citadel, right? Like, this is totally a thing that you would just wonder about. And then just this random pizza Volus delivery, dude, you know? Like, I really liked that moment. And just the lead up to that moment, you know? Like, there's super intense conversation about, like, okay, how are we going to infiltrate, you know, the Citadel archives or whatever? And then Shepard turns around and is just like, who ordered this pizza, you know? Like, it felt like such a squad bonding moment, kind of like what Craig mentioned. Like, it felt like one of those, like, your squad mattered in the grand scheme of things. Like, your squad really mattered. And for just a nonchalant moment like that in the Citadel DLC, I think for some reason the pizza delivery Volus will be my top three, because it just made me smile. It just absolutely caught me off guard and made me smile. It made the world feel more real. Because it was like, it checked another box. Like, oh yeah, that's how pizza gets delivered on the Citadel. It's just this all, like, in my imagination, I'm like, there's canon. It is only this one person, just the Volus, and he just goes around. So I love that moment.
Right, sorry, can I say something? Just going back to the Tully thing. Oh, am I glitching? Am I?
No, oh, it's okay. I can hear you. You were glitching.
Can you hear me okay? Okay. I do want to say something. I do find it quite interesting how all of the moments also do depend on, like, what that first experience was like. Because what you guys were saying as well about, like, how you can't romance Tully after seeing them, her and Garrus together. I'm the other way around. I feel like I'm being cheated on when I see that.
No, 100%. And I can totally feel that. It's crazy. We all have just completely different experiences. That's awesome.
Because, yeah, I was just sort of shaking my head. I was just like, no, I can't. I can never do that. But it does show how much, like, all of these moments mean to all of us, I think. But yeah. Sorry. What were you just going to say?
No, you go ahead. I think if we're going in the same order.
Oh, right. Okay. So I'm next, am I? My number two moment is, I kind of would be surprised if you guys didn't have the same one, because it's such a powerful moment. But it's that moment after the Citadel DLC when all of your crew are gathered on the docking bay and you're all looking at the Normandy, and just having that moment with whoever your romance is, just having a chat about how it's just back to the fight and everything, and how much of a good time that you all had. It felt like one of those moments where, I think it was one of those moments where BioWare knew they needed something for us. They needed something that would give us those moments with the companions that we didn't have, and it makes everything feel like it's all of the companions from the previous games are brought together, the Mass Effect 1 companions, the Mass Effect 2 companions, and for a moment you truly feel like your playthrough is unique, because whoever you're romancing, you're having that personal conversation with before you go back onto the Normandy, and it feels like it's a proper goodbye to everyone. That, you know, if you've romanced a Mass Effect 2 companion, then you don't really get that, do you? You get, like, a holocall on Earth at the end.
I was so confused at that. It caught me off guard.
And my first experience with it was just that. It was like that last goodbye with one of my... Well, it wasn't a romance, actually, at the time. I didn't choose a Mass Effect 2 companion. But it still seemed weird to me that some of these people, their last goodbye was just a call. And it was less than a minute. But that moment just felt so important. And the fact that they had the Normandy there as well, it just kind of, I think, cultivated everything. Because the Normandy is part of the crew. The Normandy makes the Mass Effect trilogy, I feel. And it's just everyone there, even Joker as well, who's not technically a squad mate. And yeah, I just think that moment is so beautiful with the music and how it's done with the slow motion and everything. It's just that moment's perfect in so many ways.
100%. So good.
Yeah, I was quite surprised that they didn't bring any of the Mass Effect 2 characters back for Mass Effect 3 to be actually on the ship. You see a few of them in and around and stuff, but they're all gone. It's only Mass Effect 1 characters, isn't it, that come back as permanent crew members.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was probably just because of the mechanics of the suicide mission, right? All of them could have died.
Yeah.
So they were probably, because I think they only had like 2 years to make the game or something ridiculous like that. So yeah, it might have just been like a mechanics decision of like, we're just going to feature the most likely characters to be still alive, right? Like, which is sad, because I really do think that the suicide mission is iconic. But it did kind of handcuff them, I think, for including those companions in a sad way.
Yeah.
And so my second best, one of my best moments, and there's loads, to be fair, to narrow it down to three has been quite difficult, but it was shooting Morden in the back. Again, because it's one of those kind of situations where you don't expect it to be able to happen. And I can remember I'd lost somebody on the suicide mission, my first ever playthrough, and you're getting conflicting reports on whether you should cure the genophage, and you're traveling towards it, and the data trust has said, look, if you don't do it, if you sabotage it, then you'll get our support. And I'm thinking, well, I need their support, and the Krogan might not know, and they might not find out. And then you get the Eve, is it, that she's saying, you know, is there something on that you want to say? And you're like, no, not really. And then you get to that final bit where he's like, all right, that's it, I'm going to cure it. And you're like, no, look, it's a bad idea. Look, it's not going to help anything, really. Just pretend it's going to work, and then everybody will be happy, and then we can get everybody's support. No, it's the bad idea. And you're like, all right, that's it. I was like, yeah, I'm going to shoot him to stop him. And I did. And I'm like, oh, I feel quite bad.
That is what I can't believe. It. So you shot Morden on your first playthrough?
Yeah.
Or, oh my goodness. I will say, I struggle bust just like you did him with the genophage decision. The whole time I was like, the first time Eve or Rex was like, do you want us to, are you hiding something back? And I said, no. I was like, nope, I'm not hiding anything, because I was still deciding at that point. I was like, are we going to unleash like a bunch of Krogan on the world? And it's so funny that you kind of made the decision to shoot Morden, because it was that exact moment where I knew I made the right decision to cure the genophage. Because I was so like, I remember the first time I met Morden and I was determined to hate him. I was like, no, you totally just screwed over all the Krogan, and you made this like very callous like decision that I just will not support. And then I kept talking to him. And I was still like, even after the loyalty mission, I was like, I still don't like you. But I was kind of, you know, like I was kind of doing that, you know, I don't like you, but I'm like kind of eyeing you still, like maybe. And then he started, I went up to him. It's the last conversation you have with him. And he started singing that one iconic song from a random play on just, you know, all of the different races. And that's when he won me over. And I was like, okay, fine. You're one of my favorites. So it was that moment when I got to the genophage cure and I was like, or the moment where we had to decide in on T'Chanka. And he was like, I am determined to do this and I'm determined to fix my mistake. Where I was like, oh no, I know I'm about to lose you, but it's almost for like the same reason that I almost didn't like him at first, you know, like he's trying to just atone for his mistake. So interesting that you brought that up, because there was no way I was going to click that renegade response. Even though I had like provided the enough things to have it pop up for me, I was like, no, there's no way. That's super interesting. Do you still do that? Like you still do the renegade?
If I'm doing the renegade run, I probably do. Yeah. But yeah, it was just like the first time. It's a game that's giving you that kind of option when it. You don't tend to get that these days, you know. The most NPCs or most companions have like plot armor these days, and so the ability to shoot one of your own crew in the back to stop them doing something you don't want to do, it was like
yeah, it was crazy. I think when I was like randomly researching something for the genophage cure thing, random video that I did, I learned that the choice to actually have that renegade interrupt was from someone that really liked Morden. Like one of the developers that was like, Morden was one of their favorites. And they were like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had a renegade interrupt to like shoot him in the back? And I was so shocked because I was like, if I loved a character and I was like working on like something for them, I would never bring that up because I wouldn't even want to like have that option for people. But yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, my second moment, which I have also thought of on the fly. I'm sure that there's, I'm going to have like a rethink tonight at like midnight and be like, oh, I should have told Tim and Craig this one moment. But yeah, I think my number two moment might be a little bit interesting for you guys as well. I want to hear your thoughts on it. But I think my number two moment might be at the very end of Mass Effect 1, where, the random Reaper claw, like Joker destroys Sovereign, and that one random Reaper claw just out of nowhere hits the Citadel, the council chambers. And there's a moment where you think that Shepard didn't make it. And it's, I really love that moment specifically because of all of the lead up where like Anderson comes in, like there's no dialogue. There's absolutely no dialogue. It is just like, I think the only thing he says is where's Shepard, and the companions just shake their head, you know? And then Anderson doesn't say anything from that point. And it's just the music and you're just feeling this like, oh man, did we just do all that for nothing? Or, and then you're just kind of going through thoughts like, oh, if we saved everybody and we saved the galaxy, maybe it was worth it. And then to just hear the music slowly build and build and build until the moment that you know that Shepard's gonna come out of the wreckage. And I just, it's such a cinematic moment too, because just the way that you kind of like see your Shepard running and you only see like their feet at first, and they eventually like rise up on like, I think like a little bit of a raised portion of rock or something. And then there's absolutely no dialogue. It's just your Shepard looking victorious. The two companions that you chose just looking so happy to see you, Anderson looking so happy to see you. And then just, I love, especially on Femship, because I have seen this moment with the broship as well, but just the moment where Shepard's kind of walking toward you at the end there, and my Shepard, she just gives you this smirk. Like she gives this smirk of like, yeah, I did that and I made it. That really stuck out to me. And I love that moment. I especially love that moment on subsequent playthroughs, because I really, really wished that that could have been the way that Mass Effect 3 ended, which is why it hits me so hard, I think.
Okay, so we're going to leave that at the halfway point. The second half of the interview will be out in the next episode. However, if you don't want to wait for the second part to come out, you can go and watch the full interview on the YouTube channel Poppy54Gaming. Craig, how can everybody find us?
Well, if you would like to follow the official podcast Twitter account, you can follow us at Lazarus Podcast. That's capital L, capital P. Or if you would like to follow Atharia on Twitter or X, you can follow her at Atharia, A-T-H-A-R-I-A underscore. Or you can follow my personal at Craig and His Mac with a capital K. And if you would like to follow Tim, you can follow him at Ploppy54.
Thank you very much. We do also have a Patreon as well. So if you'd like to support the show, then head over to patreon.com/thelazaruspodcast801. And we've got some exciting things coming out on there. So be sure to check that out.
Here he is. It's been a while.
Okay, just follow my lead then.
Okay.
Well, we're actually going to leave that at this point, but it's not the full conversation. That will be coming out in the next episode.
Yes.
I didn't know where I was going with that after that.
But, I don't know what to add to that. What do we add to that?
If you can't... that was it. However, if you can't wait for the full episode to come out on the podcast player, you can go to YouTube and watch the entire interview there.
On the Ploppy54 YouTube channel. Because you've got to also bear in mind that people won't know that you're Ploppy54 as well.
Yeah. Good point. However, if you don't want to wait for the full episode on your podcast player, you can head over to the YouTube channel Ploppy54Gaming and watch the full interview.
There.
Oh, God. Why is this so hard? I was going to say something witty, but it just didn't come.